Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 22, 2021. Authorities in Central Equatoria State ban the carrying of firearms.
When arms are just left into the hands of the army to move freely in populated areas is dangerous.
And health officials are calling on the residents of Juba Town to turn up for COVID-19 vaccinations.
You know, there is a common side effect that are already known with this vaccine. And vaccines, like any drugs, as we say, even Panadol, when you take it, has a side effect. Aspirin and Profen has a side effect.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Central Equatoria State have issued an order banning off-duty soldiers from carrying guns or consuming alcohol. The commissioner of Yei River County says illegal use of firearms by some security personnel has increased the crime rate and hindered the safer return of refugees and IDPs to their villages. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei Town.
Yei River County Commissioner Agri Cyrus Kanyikwa says the order prohibits the carrying of unauthorized weapons in Yei and civilian populated areas by organized forces, including the military, who are not on duty. The order also bans the consumption or production of illicit drugs like opium, marungi, sisa, and unbranded alcoholic drinks such as whiskey across the county. Agri says the order was issued to reduce the number of crimes committed by off-duty forces who are under the influence of drugs or misuse firearms.
When arms are just left into the hands of the army to move freely in populated areas, is dangerous. The community, the people are scared of guns. They have had guns and they have seen the worst part of guns. Number two, guns have been misused, especially when under influence of drugs and alcohol use. So many crimes are committed. A lot of records in the police show that the use of drugs have increased the crime rate in Yei Town.
Kanyikwa says all organized forces have been directed to implement the order, saying anyone found violating the order will be charged in court and fined a fee of not less than 60,000 South Sudanese pounds and sentenced into 6 months imprisonment. Lomuku resident Charles Dema welcomes the ban, saying it will improve safety and peace building in the county.
I am happy because of the order, since guns are not supposed to be used by soldiers who are not on duty. And once soldiers begin moving on the streets and in the residential areas without guns, civilians will be happy, and that also creates peace and unity.
Dominic Living Wawa, a recent returnee from Uganda, also thinks the ban is a good idea. Wawa says many South Sudanese who wish to return are still afraid and traumatized due to long years of conflict.
This is what we need to hear. This is what we want to see. We want to see that our soldiers are so friendly to the civilians, and then becoming so friendly to us is when we see you moving without gun. Because if you have gun and then you are drunk, by the way, anything can happen anytime. What forced us to go to the camp is fear of gun, fear of death. People have this trauma in them where we don't want to see these things.
Lieutenant Colonel Michael Machar, the South Sudan People's Defense Force Director for Civil Military Relations in Yei, also welcomes the order. He says it comes at the right time after civilians suffered through years of conflict. Machar believes the ban on firearms will build trust and confidence between the civilians and the military.
We urge our unit, the military forces, if you are not on duty and if you are not on mission, then there is no need for you to be in military uniform and also carrying a guns within the public. This order is very important, and it is this one will build a relationship between civilians and the military. All these things should be confined in the military section. If you are coming from anywhere, from the armed forces, then you have to place your guns under roadblocks, commanders.
Local officials say many former refugees are returning to resettle in their respective villages and towns following the formation of the local government structures. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin, reporting from Ye Town, Central Equatorial State.
Officials at the South Sudan National Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization in the capital Juba are calling on residents of the town who qualify for COVID-19 vaccine to get the shot. So far, 2,000 people, mostly healthcare workers, have been vaccinated in South Sudan. An official with the National Ministry of Health says there is a low turnout at vaccination centers across Juba town due to rumors and reports about the side effects of the AstraZeneca vaccine. For VOA News, David Monodanga has more from Juba.
Several senior South Sudan government officials, including President Salva Kiir, have received their first shots of the AstraZeneca vaccine donated by the COVAX facility, a global collaboration formed to ensure equitable access to COVID-19 tests, treatments, and vaccines. The South Sudan National Ministry of Health says it hopes to vaccinate about 25,000 health practitioners, and the rest of the 132,000 doses will be offered to elderly persons and those with underlying health conditions. Dr. Richard Lako is the incident manager for COVID-19 at South Sudan's Health Ministry. Lako says while some people are turning up to get their shots, others are hesitant due to unfounded rumors about the vaccine's side effects.
We know there is a common side effects that are already known with these vaccines, and vaccines like any drugs, as we said, even Panadol, when you take it, has a side effect. Aspirin and Profen has a side effect, can cause bleeding, can cause ulcer. But yet it's still, because the benefit that you take is more, and very few people that may develop that kind of thing, and still people continue. Cancer drugs. You see, when you start taking cancer drugs, you even lose your hair, you lose a lot of pain and all this. But because of the benefits that you'll get, people will still go for it.
Dr. Lako says the side effects reported by some of the 2,000 people already vaccinated are common, such as mild fever, fatigue, body pain, and arm soreness where the shot is injected.
What is so important is even if you get the complete vaccination, that does not mean you have vaccinated and that's all, you will not get the disease. No, that's not the case. Even if you are vaccinated, it's more likely that you can get another infection. But the good news is that if you have that infection, it will be mild and it will not require you perhaps go to the hospital or it will not be killing you. That's why we are recommending that people should get vaccinated.
India's drug regulator has allowed the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine to be used for up to 9 months from manufacture date. On Monday, the National Ministry of Health officials said doses of AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines donated by the African Union and the South African-based telecommunication company, MTN, were not suitable for use due to its shelf life. The Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID vaccines have a shelf life of up to 6 months. Dr. Gurasha Guyo, the WHO's emergency coordinator for South Sudan, is encouraging more South Sudanese to take the COVID-19 shot.
We have 132,000 doses. Over the last 2 weeks, we have given out 2,000. So let more and more healthcare workers and those who are above 65 years and those with underlying condition come and take these vaccines.
A Juba resident who prefers to be identified only as Sarah because she is a local women leader who feels that her view would influence other women's decisions on whether to take the vaccine or not, says she doubts the vaccine protects people against getting infected.
I've read a lot of literature around it. There's no convincing theory that convinces me that I will not catch coronavirus, that I will not be able to transmit it to other people. However, there's an option that if I follow the SOPs by the Ministry of Health and World Health Organization, I can be safe. I'll continue to wash my hands, I'll continue to social distance, keep away from crowd, and try to boost my immunity.
Joseph Kenyi is another resident of Juba who received the AstraZeneca shot about 2 weeks ago. He says the vaccine gives him some protection since his work exposes him to many people in the community.
I'm a community mobilizer, somebody who raise awareness on the dangers of COVID-19. This is the reason number one that impelled me to go for that vaccination. Number two, the vaccine is highly scientific. It means it's very safe for people to use for the time being. The side effects were very mild, like any other vaccine. For example, like the measles vaccine, for the TB, I think the same, whereby a person has some mild fevers, sometimes general body weakness, that can elapse for at least 3 days.
Juba Town has 3 vaccination centers at the Juba Teaching Hospital, the Police Hospital, and the Military Hospital in the Jebel area. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
From Juba, we moved to Rumbek, where a singer in the Lake State capital Rumbek was hospitalized after police assaulted him while recording a song that criticizes a crackdown on young men wearing dreadlocks. Lake State Police, the police spokesperson for Lake State, confirms the incident and calls the assault a crime. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor has more from Rumbek.
Majak Majok, who is commonly known by his stage name, Chili Boy, says police entered the Eagle Sound studio in Rumbek on Tuesday night and accused him of sabotaging a government order by composing a song that encourages young people to wear dreadlocks. He says the officers ordered him to delete the song he had just recorded. After complying with the officer's order, Majuk says the officers beat him, then threw him in the back of a Land Cruiser, where they tortured him until he fell unconscious.
Actually, I was beaten. I was about to record the song. Before I record the songs, some of the policemen come to the studio, find me in the studio, which is called Ego Sound Production. Then they tied me up, took me to the police and arrested me. They have beaten me for the whole of the night. The song has not yet come out, my people. By then, they came to me in the studio, and then one of the policemen called me out and asked me, why did you sing the song? So I said, no, the song has not yet come out. Then he ordered me to go and lead the song. Then I told him, if you guys arrest me because of the song, you should go and delete the songs by yourself, but not me. Your right is that. Let me just go onto the car, then take me to the police. That's what I told them. So they said the song is all about the government, and the song is not yet come out. They went at night and took the demo. I did not even know how did they take it and when did they take it even. So I just had the demo outside. So that's how I know it.
Majok is urging the South Sudan government to consider the roles played by artists in changing the lives of people through their songs and allowing artists the right to express themselves and be a voice for the voiceless. Chili Boy's manager, Peter Thain Makur, commonly known as YB, confirms the local singer was beaten by police.
When we go and ask the police people, they say the order is coming from above, coming from the commissioner. And then I went to commissioner. Commissioner said I did not give any force to anyone to arrest the guy, which is called Chili Boy. So we went back and we said this is in the statement. Now they released Chili Boy yesterday at 11. Now Chili Boy is in hospital and we are still on investigate to get where this problem come from.
Rumbek Central County Police Investigator John Friday Marial Mapor confirms a case of assault involving Chili Voice has been filed and he is investigating the matter.
The case came to me this morning and the incident occurred, 2 days ago. The results that I have got here from the complainant is that he was about to compose the song based on his statement. Before he could compose the song out, he told me that he was attacked in a studio called Eagle Sound Studio. He was attacked based on his statement by a group of policemen. He was just tied up, beaten seriously by a group of policemen who were patrolling on that day.
Mapor says he will question police officers who were on patrol duty Tuesday. Lake State Police spokesperson Captain Elijah Mabor Makwai says police officers should never take the law into their own hands. This is the first time Lake State Police have either assaulted a singer with dreadlocks or forced the artist to shave their hair. Last year, police arrested several artists with dreadlocks or whose hair color was tinted, but later release them. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, children in Ethiopia's Tigray region are suffering Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
name something that you haven't tried but hope to someday.
I never drive a car, but I hoped to, because I've grown in a poor background, and in my life I desire to do so.
I want to travel from Uganda to a different country because I've never moved out of Uganda. Yes.
I've never tried bungee jumping, but I would like to try it one time.
I've not tried paragliding before, but I would like to try it someday, being at the top of the mountain, jumping and flying in the sky like a bird.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN Children's Fund warns the conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province is stripping tens of thousands of children of their rights, plunging them into a protection crisis that is causing them long-lasting harm. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UNICEF spokesman James Elder has just returned from a visit to Ethiopia's Tigray. He says his agency's fears for the welfare of children expressed at the onset of the conflict nearly 6 months ago now are being realized. Elder says children are suffering from a protection crisis as the incidence of rape and gender-based violence grows. Since the start of the year, he says just one UNICEF-supported center has been reporting an average of 3 cases of gender-based violence every day. Those are the reported cases, he says, adding the true number is certainly higher.
The personal stories I received from children who had been raped, or testimony of women who were victims of sexual violence, were harrowing and quite cruel. Yes, I heard traumatic stories of, you know, children as young as 14. I heard reports of gang rapes, quite bewildering.
Elder says authorities must publicly denounce the attacks and hold the perpetrators accountable. He says UNICEF is providing medical and psychosocial support to the survivors of sexual assault. He says children caught in the conflict also are suffering from education and nutritional emergencies. He says 1.4 million children have not been in school for more than a year. Of the many children he encountered on his visit to Tigray, Elder says the story of 16-year-old Merhewit remains seared in his mind.
She had walked 300 kilometers with her baby brother on her back from the west of the country amid pretty intense fighting. There was 300 kilometers and in broken flip-flops. Those stories abound. She was, you know, a star in physics, and now she's searching for food and hasn't seen a classroom in a year.
Last November, fighters from the Tigray People's Liberation Front attacked army bases in the region, according to the federal government. The attack, Ethiopia's prime minister said, prompted his government to launch a military offensive to push the group out. The conflict has interrupted harvesting activities, resulting in lost income and livelihoods. And now, because of the fighting, farmers cannot access their land to plant their crop, resulting in severe food shortages. Elder says that is causing a spike in malnutrition, with an increasing number of acutely malnourished children requiring life-saving treatment. He says UNICEF requires greater international support to meet the many protection, education, and nutritional needs of Tigray's children and women. He notes less than half of UNICEF's $47.6 million appeal for Tigray is funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today, April 22nd, is Earth Day. It's a day set aside to celebrate the planet and to rededicate ourselves to learning about and protecting the robust yet delicate systems in which all life depends. Of special concern this year are the world's oceans. covering two-thirds of the world's surface. The ocean has historically been seen as too big to fail, and its nutritious bounty is too much abundant to exhaust. Unfortunately, the Earth's oceans are threatened by pollution and human-caused climate change. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with journalist Ian Urbina, author of The Outlaw Ocean, Journeys Across Last Untamed Frontier, and the founder of the Outlaw Ocean Project, a non-profit journalism organization dedicated to reporting on the intersection of human rights, labor, and ocean environment.
With his laughing eyes, deeply furrowed skin, and unruly white beard, the poet Gary Snyder looks every bit the wizened sage as he reads an excerpt from his translation of a poem by Han Shan. This Chinese poet, whom Snyder affectionately calls a mountain madman, lived over 1,100 years ago in a cave deep in the wilderness.
The path to Han Shan's place is laughable. A path, but no sign of cart or horse. Converging gorges, hard to trace their twists. Jumbled cliffs, unbelievably rugged. A thousand grasses bend with dew. A hill of pines hums in the wind. And now I've lost the shortcut home. Body asking shadow, how do you keep up?
Like Han Shan, Snyder says he has gained personal and spiritual insights from his experiences in nature. He is intimately familiar with the wild landscapes of Japan, where he lived and studied Zen Buddhism as a young man. And he knows the winding trails of California's Sierra Nevada mountain range, his home for many years.
A trail is really a handy thing. It's a lot easier to hike on a trail than it is to crash through the brush. And you get from place A to place B that way. But in earlier times, before village agriculture, people went into the woods and the fields and the marshes to gather the various things they needed. You want to dye something, you go into the woods and marshes to look for the dye plants. Poison oak is a very good black dye. If you want berries, you go where the berry patches are. And of course, if you're going fishing or hunting, you know where to go to a marsh, a lake, a stream. So the trail is only useful to get you to where you're going to leave the trail. But what you really want is not on the trail most of the time. You have to go off the trail and go looking for it. That's true in life, too.
In this reading from his poem, Off the Trail, Snyder recalls hiking with his late wife, Carol, and the pleasures of a trackless wilderness.
We are free to find our own way over rocks, through the trees, where there are no trails. The ridge and the forest present themselves to our eyes and feet, which decide for themselves in their old learned wisdom of doing where the wild will take us.
Snyder says there is a unique fellowship between humans and nature that is embodied in one's home place.
And it can be developed even in Manhattan by paying attention to where you are, what the elevation is where you are, what the rock outcroppings might be, what birds stop there when they're migrating, if any. And people like myself, who are watershed bioregionalists, were particularly interested in where the original streams were and can we find them again and maybe daylight some of them.
Daylighting refers to efforts by some urban environmental planners to identify natural streams that have been diverted or paved over and restore them to their original state. Snyder says concerns about the natural environment are especially keen in California, where farmers depend on melting snowpack each spring to irrigate their fields.
And if global warming causes less snow to fall and to melt faster and turn it into just rain so it runs off in the winter, that'll be the end of California agriculture. There were periods in the past where that was the way it was anyway.
Despite his concern about the enormous damage humans have done to the environment, Snyder is hopeful such practices are changing, and he's confident, too, in the power and resilience of nature.
We can say two things at the same time. We can say we really have to work on improving our style here and clean up our act, and if we don't, we'll maybe be in very bad trouble and also cause a lot of trouble for other beings. But then you can also say, given the longer cycles of planetary change, nature always bats last. And we can hope that that really will continue to be the case.
Snyder, who was born in 1930, says he has a few more books to write, including a Buddhist memoir, before, as he puts it, he packs it away, drinks red wine, and watches the sunset. With the poet Gary Snyder, I'm Adam Phillips reporting.
That's Ian Urbina, the founder of the Outlaw Ocean Project, a nonprofit journalism organization dedicated to reporting on the intersection of human rights, labor, and ocean environmentalism. U.S. President Joe Biden has invited 40 world leaders to a virtual summit on climate change. The United States is in a precarious position internationally after the Trump administration withdrew from the UN Paris Climate Agreement. Advocates expect Biden to turn things around. But delivering will not be easy, VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
We're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord as of today.
On his first day in office, President Joe Biden aimed to demonstrate that climate change would be at the top of his agenda. Biden's Earth Day summit intends to show world leaders that things have changed from the Trump administration's disregard for the issue.
It's an opportunity for the U.S. to come back onto the scene to show that it's taking climate change seriously.
The stakes are rising. The consequences of climate change are becoming ever more apparent, with more wildfires, deeper droughts, and stronger storms. The 2015 UN Paris Climate Agreement aimed to put a lid on global warming. But experts say the goal set in Paris is slipping away.
We're at grave risk right now. We're seeing temperatures continuing to climb. We're seeing emissions continuing to climb, going in the opposite direction from where they need to. And that's why so many are calling this a make or break decade.
Global emissions have been on a steady upward path for decades. Current policies will continue adding to the problem. But Wasco says emissions need to fall by nearly half by 2030 to be on a path that avoids the worst impacts of climate change.
If you don't start bending that curve now, the trajectory that one would have to be on following 2030 is just, you know, one that would be incredibly difficult to achieve.
Advocates are calling on Biden to announce a 50% cut in U.S. emissions by 2030. The White House says it will announce its target ahead of the summit. Biden sees opportunities in fighting climate change, like building solar and wind power and electric vehicle charging stations, jobs that cannot be shipped overseas. It's a cornerstone of his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan.
The American Jobs Plan will lead to a transformational progress in our effort to tackle climate change with American jobs and American ingenuity.
But Congress would have to pass that plan, and Republicans are solidly opposed.
It is a massive expansion of the government, financed on the backs of the American taxpayers, with taxes that will hurt the economy and cost us jobs.
It's not clear the United States will make the cuts Biden wants. That weakens the U.S. position globally.
Until we can sort out those politics, it's going to be tough for us to claim this leadership mantle internationally on the top line numbers.
Meanwhile, eyes are on other major polluters, including China, the world's biggest, and India, a rising source, to announce their climate plans ahead of a major UN conference in Glasgow in November. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
That's our show for this Thursday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202-630-8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Nanyongere by Colonel Mido. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Nani olo tir, nani olo ngere mama.
Nani olotir, nani olongere, nani olotir, nani olongere. Nani olotir,
ayamani balu taoro ena isu.
Nani olongere,
ayamani balu taoro ena isu.
Nani onyo horibong,
ayamani balu taoro ena isu.